Hey everyone, welcome back to the BT Powerhouse podcast. My name is Thomas Bendit. As always, I'm your host and manager of the BT Powerhouse podcast, and as well the managing editor of the site. But it is Wednesday evening, March 22nd. We are a day away from the 2017 Sweet 16. So hopefully you're eating some candy or some ice cream right now, I guess, because it's sweet. but yeah, I mean, we have a lot going on here across, the Big Ten, excuse me, sorry. I'm trying to get my notes in order for the podcast. I'm hoping to have two or three guests on tonight. So a lot of last minute stuff, trying to make sure people can make it on. But, obviously a lot to talk about. I want to spend a brief minute or two talking about last weekend. We're going to have months and months to talk about this season, what it meant for each program. I'm hoping to do sort of a in-depth podcast on each Big Ten team after the season's done. But the reason I say that is just because we still have three Big Ten teams going in the NCAA tournament. And we also have one Big Ten team in the NIT, Illinois, playing tonight. But it makes sense to focus on those games, not talk as much about last week, just because, you know, it's still going. And we only have a couple more games left to preview, guys. So I don't want to focus on too much on those other teams. But I appreciate all of you who are interested in the rest of the league. And we certainly have a lot to talk about on that end. But unfortunately, not going to be as much about that talk here. I will try to answer a couple questions at the end, and I think I got at least one on some of the other teams who didn't make it to the Sweet 16. So we will be talking about those as well. a good bit of material here and an intro. And I'm going to dive right into my analysis here. I'm totally losing track of things. I'm a wreck today, apparently. So let's start. Let's jump right into things here. Going back to last weekend, let's spend just a few minutes recapping what happened. And of course, my computer is freezing up right now. As I said, this is just a mess. I'm a mess today. But we'll make it through. We'll make it through, guys. Hold on for a few more minutes at least. Of course, seven Big Ten teams end up making the NCAA tournament. Purdue, Wisconsin, Maryland, Minnesota, Michigan, Northwestern, and Michigan State. Only two Big Ten teams didn't make it through the first round this year. Those teams were Maryland and Minnesota. Maryland goes down to Xavier, who has since made the Sweet 16 after a dominant win over Florida State. And the other was Minnesota, who went down to Middle Tennessee State. You know, both were disappointing losses, specifically for Maryland, because they looked like they were in pretty good shape about halfway through the game. I'm trying to pull up the in-game odds here from KenPom. But, yeah, with roughly 15 minutes to go, Maryland was sitting at 65% odds. And with about 14 minutes to go, they almost had 75% odds to win. And I know 14 minutes is an eternity in college basketball. We all know that. But, you know, certainly the Terps were in good shape, you know, hoping to move on, hoping to advance to the round of 32 for the second straight year. But Xavier uses a huge, huge second half performance from Bluett. Big, big time game for him. You know, he finishes with 21 points. Four rebounds, excuse me. Big game for him. And Maryland goes down. They finish the season at 24-9. Overall, a pretty solid year. But again, we're not going to dive into these teams too much. Then Minnesota, quote unquote, was upset against Middle Tennessee State. Middle Tennessee was actually favored in Vegas. And on our last podcast, I said that, it was shocking how close this one projected on paper. So hopefully a lot of you picked that in your bracket. Obviously the Gopher fans were disappointed there, but like Maryland, very young team, the Golden Gophers. So a lot to be happy about this season and a lot to be excited about going forward. And again, I know a lot of the fans, I'm sure, are down after losing to a, quote, mid-major, but Middle Tennessee State's a good team. I think they would have beaten a lot of the Big Ten teams this year, so I wouldn't hang your head too far down. Taking a step back, five Big Ten teams move on to the round of 32, and two of those teams go down in the round of 32. Those were Northwestern and Michigan State. Northwestern goes down to Gonzaga, a one-loss Gonzaga team that has played spectacularly over the course of the season. The Bulldogs are a great team. There was some dramatic stuff at the end. Undoubtedly a blown call against Northwestern, which may have changed the outcome. Personally, I don't think it did, but obviously it kept things closer for a longer – it would have kept things closer, excuse me. It would have kept things closer for the Wildcats to the Bulldogs, but Northwestern goes down like Minnesota, like Maryland, young team. They finished 24-12, first NCAA tournament appearance for the program. First NCAA tournament win as they get the first round win against Vanderbilt, who conveniently blew the game at the end, or at least their shot at it. So maybe that was a little bit of things coming back around for the Wildcats. And then the other team who was eliminated was Michigan State. They score an absolutely dominant win over Miami in the first round to move on. And after starting really, really badly, so big time performance from the Spartans in that game, but they just didn't have enough firepower to get past Kansas. Josh Jackson was excellent. Mason made some nice plays as well. And that Kansas transition game just tore Michigan State apart in the second half. Bridges ended up with a big game, 22 points, 8 rebounds in what will likely be his last game as a Spartan. But just not enough, with Graham Jackson, Mason for Kansas, just too much firepower for the Jayhawks. The Spartans finished the season at 20-15. I'm hoping to have an article up in BT Powerhouse in the next day or two about Michigan State's season. I thought it was a pretty big disappointment given preseason expectations. But again, I'm not going to dive too much into that, but the Spartans don't have enough. They lose in the round of 32 and they are out. They're done. So what that leaves us with is three teams moving into this week. Those are Michigan, Purdue, and Wisconsin. I'm hoping to have a couple guests on here in the coming minutes or so to chat about, what it means, what to make of these teams' chances in the next 2 days, actually, Thursday and Friday. Obviously a lot of you will listen to this at varying times, but a lot to make of these three teams, their runs. I'm just going to start generally as some just general comments about the Big Ten, what they've done so far. Big general point, I think the Big Ten has had a great tournament performance. I've said on this podcast a few times that I thought the Big Ten has underwhelmed significantly overall. And not necessarily underwhelmed, but they just haven't been that great of a conference. I know a lot of people might be grinding their teeth a bit about that, but the Big Ten hasn't been the best conference in the country this year. And frankly, I think the Big 12 has been the best, number one. I think the ACC has been number two. And then I think you have the Big Ten and Big East pretty close behind it. But the Big Ten is a decent hung back from the Big 12 and ACC. I know the ACC has sucked it up in this year's NCAA tournament, but it's still a deep, deep conference. That many NCAA tournament bids, that many teams advancing to the round of 32 says something about the conference. And really, they had a bunch of teams in the NIT as well, or at least, some teams who have had success in the NIT, I should say. But that aside, and again, like I said, I don't think the Big Ten has been the best conference, but they've had a great performance in this postseason so far, and specifically this NCAA tournament. To have three teams in the Sweet 16 that matches the nation's best, nobody has more right now than that. And you had five teams advance to the round of 32. I mean, that says a lot. And we should note that some of these teams who've made the Sweet 16 have knocked off some big-time teams. Really, actually, all three of the Big Ten teams. let you know, starting with Michigan, they knock off a red hot Oklahoma State team. And when I say red hot, I'm talking offensively, just an absolute scoring machine. And then they knock off Louisville and Rick Pitino in a game that I'm not going to call it a home game, but Louisville had a lot of crowd, a lot of fans in Indy, excuse me. So, I mean, that's a big time win. Louisville won a lot of games this year. Moving on to Purdue, you know, the first round game, Vermont, nothing too much there. But to beat Iowa State, you know, an Iowa State team that just won the Big 12 tournament, you know, I just talked about how highly I respect the Big 12. That's a huge win for the Boilermakers. And to beat them in, I mean, I would never call it a blowout or anything like that, but they won that game. You know, it didn't come down to the last second there. It wasn't a buzzer beater or anything. They won that game flat out. And that's a huge win for the Boilermakers, which we'll get into a little bit later. But, and then the last one, Wisconsin, excuse me. I got a little ahead of myself there. You know, they knock off Villanova, the number one seed in the NCAA tournament this year. That is a absolutely huge win. There is no exaggerating on how big of a win that is. You know, what did Villanova lose? 3 games this year in the regular season and the conference tournament. Yeah, 3 games. You know, they're coming into that game at 32-3. That is like a final form resume. I mean, there are teams who win. Like if Michigan wins the NCAA tournament this year, I don't even think they're going to have 32 wins. And Villanova had that after the first round. That's just mind-boggling. And Wisconsin takes them down in the shocker that, you know, frankly, just wrecked everyone's brackets. But yeah, so I mean, huge performance for the Big Ten. There is no exaggerating on from top to bottom just how much that meant. I mean, again, 3 teams to advance. And then, you know, Michigan State's dominating win over Miami. You know, Northwestern showing up well in the first NCAA tournament. And even to a certain extent, you know, a lot of people were down after Maryland lost to Xavier and Minnesota lost to Middle Tennessee State, primarily because those are the first couple games in the tournament. But neither of those losses were really that bad. You know, Middle Tennessee State was very underseeded from an advanced stats perspective. You know, they ended up finishing 7 spots behind the Gophers on KenPom. You know, Middle Tennessee ended up with finishing the season at 31-5. Obviously, just a insane season there for them. And you know, you spin off of them, so to speak, and move to Maryland. You know, Xavier really put that to bed when they dominated Florida State in the round of 32. To make the Sweet 16. So I think when you take a step back there too, neither of those losses are really that painful. And then, you know, Michigan State, they lose to a number one seed, and Northwestern loses to a number one seed. So, I mean, you never want to see the Big Ten teams lose if you're rooting for, you know, quote unquote conference dominance, so to speak. But you do have, to a certain extent, have to acknowledge that, you know, losing to a one seed isn't exactly embarrassing, especially for Michigan State and Northwestern teams that had to work to get into the NCAA tournament. You know, these weren't 2 and 3 seeds here. These were, I don't want to call them bubble teams because they weren't that close to the bubble, obviously. Otherwise, they would have been the first 4 or a 10 seed or something like that. But these were teams that had a little pressure coming in the last week or two of the regular season. And to lose the number one seed, I don't think speaks that negatively towards their overall performance or projections or whatever you want to make along those lines, so to speak. But yeah, so let's dive into some of these teams. And we're just going to go in alphabetical order here. We'll start with Michigan, and to help us break them down, we have Adam on from FanRag Sports. Adam, how's it going?
Doing well, Thomas. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, excited to have you on. Obviously, you know, a lot going on this week with the Sweet 16. The Michigan Wolverines advance, a team you're very familiar with, you know, having covered them this season. What do you make of this run, and what do you make of this Michigan team right now?
I'm not surprised at all. You know, and beforehand, I feel like the Big Ten tournament run really caught, you know, raised a lot of eyebrows, turned heads, however you want to say it. They gained a lot of attention, but these guys were a good team before then, and I think that they proved that during some stretches during the regular season. I still go back and look at that Indiana win. I still look at that Michigan State win. I mean, these guys have had it in them. I think it was just a timing thing, so I'm not surprised. I do think, however, I mean, Sweet 16, Elite 8 was the ceiling, I was thinking. So I do think, and I don't want to hurt any Michigan fans' feelings here, but I do think it comes to an end this weekend. But at the same time, you know, you have to kind of look at it. There was a certain contingent that didn't like the job that John Beilein was doing. They wanted him fired. The team was garbage. And, you know, you heard all the spiels out there. So they played up to their potential. I think this was a team that was this good the entire time, and it just needed some time to mature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I remember thinking, and I remember we had discussed it earlier this season, the fact that, you know, if Michigan really plays their best game, they're going to be really, really tough to beat. And I think any of these games, going back to the Big Ten tournament or even, you know, late in the season, if you had told me, hey, Michigan, you know, beat Purdue in the Big Ten tournament, I'd say, okay, you know, they beat Wisconsin. Okay. Even Louisville, I would have said, okay, I could see that. But I don't know if I ever would have seen these all in a row. Has the consistency impressed you here over the last really almost a month now?
Yeah. And you know what I thought was even kind of, we've heard all kinds of people, national media and, you know, television, everybody praise the Wolverines. I heard one comment that I think really sticks out just because given who said it, and it was former Michigan State coach Judd Heathcote. He was on with Graham Couch and Jack Ebling yesterday on 92.1 in East Lansing, and he said that he's watched all their tournament games. He's paid close attention to Michigan, and he said that they keep getting better and better, and that's kind of like the unbelievable part. I'm not directly quoting him here, but something along those lines that he's just been so impressed. They just keep getting better and better. And while he doesn't think that they'll win this weekend, he said, who knows? And that's kind of the factor, I think, too. I remember asking John Beilein during the season about having a team. You don't necessarily know what you're going to get. And now that you mentioned the consistency, I think they know what they're going to get now. And I think it's not they don't just have to rely on Derek Walton either. I mean, we've seen the emergence of Mo Wagner has kind of taken on a life of his own. And, you know, we've seen DJ Wilson play well. We've seen Muhammad Ali, Abdul Rahman play good defense and give him a spark. They're really a well-rounded team. I think that I like thinking in terms of being complete, but I don't want to just throw around the complete tag all the time. But these guys have all the pieces, I think, that you want to look for in a dangerous tournament team. And they've shown it all throughout March.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you talk a little bit about how they have this sort of completeness, so to speak, or at least it's starting to come together here. You know, let's take a step back here. And obviously, you know, you talked about Wagner, you talked about Walton, they have all these different pieces. You know, if you're an opposing coach.
Look up there for a second. If I'm an opposing coach, what?
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, if you're an opposing coach here, you know, over the last couple of weeks, you know, Michigan, they can beat you. Do you think there is sort of a plan to, quote unquote, shut down this Michigan offense?
I don't know. And I'm sorry, you're going in and out here. It might be my connection. I don't think that there is one way to shut down Michigan's offense. I mean, we saw it. I mean, Derek Walton didn't have a great shooting night against Louisville. What was it, 3 of 13 or something like that? I mean, he influenced the game, but Michigan's to the point now where I think Mo Wagner can you know, be that guy. DJ Wilson can be, and they have been that guy. And that's kind of, like you said, going to that sense of completeness there. And that's the way that I look at them, that they have enough. I mean, they're not, don't get me wrong here, I'm not crowning them national champions. Like I said, I think they lose this weekend, but given where they started and the perception and to where they are right now and just the maturation of everybody And it's, like I said, it hasn't just been one guy. I mean, we've even seen Zach Ervin play well during March, which is a definite plus. So, I mean, there is no one way to shut down Michigan, because if you're going to try to beat them in the perimeter, they can beat you inside with DJ and Mo, and they've proven that.
Yeah, I agree. But speaking of this weekend, I don't expect them to make it through. But obviously, they open up with Oregon on Thursday night, playing in Kansas City. So I'm not sure either team will have a huge home contingent there. What do you see out of this game? Is there anything that pops out to you, and anything that fans should be watching for?
Well, I think one thing that does kind of stand out, and Beilein mentioned this on Tuesday, and this might even be an advantage for Michigan, is that in a few ways, Oregon is similar to Louisville and is similar to Oklahoma State. And Beilein would talk about how Oklahoma State was running an offense similar. I think he said it was exactly Johnny Orr, former Michigan coach, Johnny Orr's offense. So it's stuff that he was familiar with. It was stuff that he's able to counter. And I think that might be the case with Oregon. The only thing, I mean, a terrific guard tandem, right, with Dorsey and Dylan Brooks, Tyler Dorsey and Dylan Brooks. So that's one thing that had me concerned about Michigan. Without having Chris Boucher in there, I think, you know, that could be a plus for Michigan. It's not a positive for Oregon, obviously. So, I mean, I'm not counting them out against Oregon by any stretch. I mean, it is a winnable game. But then, if you look at the potential next opponent, and like, you know, I'm in love with Kansas, and I've said it a million times. Purdue is a very good team, and to beat Purdue three times in one year is I don't know if anybody's ever done that. I was looking up some stats. I mean, Duke, a couple in that 15 run beat, I think it was North Carolina State three times in one year, and UConn, I'm forgetting the team, had beaten someone three times in one year as well. So, I mean, it can be done. It's not impossible, but I just think that the odds are against Michigan should it get past Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of agree. I think it's going to be a big-time shootout. I'm sure that's not a crazy opinion at all or unique, but
no.
I think Oregon and Michigan are going to be able to score with relative ease. And, you know, obviously that backcourt for Oregon just is an absolute scoring punch. You know, Dorsey and Brooks, they both shoot over 40% from three, both really efficient. Brooks, great passer. What is the X factor for you in this game? I mean, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, it's going to be a shootout, but, you know, obviously somebody has to win at the end. What do you think Michigan has to do to win besides just, you know, score a bunch of points, I guess?
One advantage, and, you know, I've been thinking about this for the past couple of days now, ever since, you know, when Oregon beat Rhode Island, we knew Michigan would be playing. And I keep looking, and I don't know if it's just like it's to my own detriment, but I really want to say Zach Ervin. If Zach has one of the, I mean, and it hasn't been even by any stretch, but I mean, if you know what I'm talking about. If we get that, mm-hmm. if you see that type of Zach Ervin, then I think Michigan can win this thing, beat Oregon, because he can kind of compensate. He can help them a little bit if they have to go inside, because Zach does have some size, and he, you know, prior to DJ, I remember Zach telling me, you know, that he had been used to having to check bigger guys because they didn't really have that size. So now, you know, they doesn't have to do that on a regular basis, and maybe teams aren't scouting him for that. Maybe that can be kind of a flex point for them. I mean, they get four, you know, 13, 14 point night from Zach Ervin, and the rest of everybody has done what we've seen them do. I think that could be the tipping factor, because I do think it's going to be an even game. So what, you know, my factor, what's going to set them apart? Well, I think a good night from Zach, it doesn't even have to be a great night. A good night from Zach Ervin could tilt the balance for Michigan.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting one, because, you know, I think when you sit back, Irvin's probably, well, I don't know. I guess it depends on what lineup Oregon throws out there. But, you know, with Boucher out, I would guess Irvin's going to get some serious time on Brooks. And if not, certainly on Dorsey. So defensively, I'm speaking. So that will be an interesting one. And obviously, if Ervin could even slow down either of those guys, that would be massive for Michigan's chances to come out on top. But You know, assuming Michigan gets passed, which is a huge assumption, you know, if you're a believer in KenPom, Oregon's favored. They have a 52% chance to win. So it's a coin flip, but they're the advanced stats favorites coming in. So big assumption here. But if Michigan makes it past, they most likely get Kansas, maybe Purdue. And for our listeners, we'll get to Purdue here in a couple minutes. But assuming they get Kansas and sort of it goes chalk the other side, what are you watching for? Obviously, you like Kansas, and certainly Big Ten fans are aware that another Big Ten team just played the Jayhawks and lost. But how do you see that kind of matchup shaking out?
I don't think anybody's going to beat Kansas this year. I mean, my bracket has been dismantled, but I'm kind of proud of it in a way because, you know, we've seen these have all been close games. You know what I mean? With the exception of, what was it, Xavier blowing out Florida State. So good job, Seminoles. Thanks for that. But other than that, I've been pretty steady. I don't think anybody's going to beat Kansas. I really don't. And I was really impressed with the way that they shut down because – Michigan State played a pretty good game, you know, for, you know, 70% of that game Friday night, St. Patrick's Day. It's not like the score can be a little bit deceiving. And I think what I really liked about Kansas was one of those teams they see you're getting weak. They sense a little bit of vulnerability. Bam, they pounce. Josh Jackson can pounce. Frank Mason III can pounce. I like Devontae Graham. They have that quality to where I feel like they can put you away, and that's valuable this time of year. You know, I mean, it's not okay. Well, we can try to get them next time, and there is no next time. This is it. So, I do like Kansas, and that's why, it's not just, I mean, matchup wise, Michigan versus it's anybody versus Kansas. And I mean, I know that Michigan State didn't have a great year, but it was pretty impressive to see them beat Miami by 20 in the first round, and I didn't see that coming. I thought the Hurricanes would win that game, and then to see them go and at least compete for a little bit against Kansas before Kansas was able to, like I said, open that up. So that's what I like about the Jayhawks, and you know, my bracket is really hoping that that's what they do for the rest of the way.
Certainly, yeah. I took a huge hit with Duke going down last weekend, but I won't get into that.
I don't think Villanova did anybody any favors either. We could probably go down. We could probably go down the board here, and I thought Seton Hall was going to be Arkansas. I mean, there's all kind. That was a close game. I mean, the Vanderbilt Northwestern game, that was a close game. I picked Vanderbilt, so you know, all those little. If you're wrong on some of those games, I feel like you shouldn't feel too bad because literally they came down to like one possession on a lot of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know the first day I kept getting burned by those near upsets. You know, I had UNC Wilmington and they almost win and then they go to Virginia wins and it's like, oh geez. but yeah, so, you know, obviously it's a tall task for Michigan this weekend to get, to make it to the third week of the tournament. But let's play the hypotheticals here, and let's say Michigan, you know, does beat Oregon. They get through either Kansas or Purdue, at least on paper, Kansas. They make it to Phoenix. They get to the Final Four. What would that mean for this program? And frankly, what would even getting to the Elite Eight mean for John Beilein, for the Wolverines, and to have another shot at getting to the national championship game and potentially pulling it off this year?
Well, of course, you know, there's a premium of the Final Four. I mean, that's just, and it's like almost, you don't have to win it, just getting there. I mean, we hear Michigan State, you know, it's like, I mean, Izzo, 7-5, he's only won it one time, but you know, it's just getting there. So I think, you know, that of course it's going to be a feather in the cap for Beilein, and he would certainly deserve it. A wonderful coach. I can't say enough great things about what he did for them. So, I mean, I think this year and has since he's been in Ann Arbor. Sorry there. I tried to miss without stuttering one time, and it just can't happen. But, yeah, I mean, it would be a milestone moment. Getting to the Elite Eight would be big, too. But I think there's no shame in how far they've gone right now, and that's kind of a point that I've also made, you know, like discussing it with people on Twitter. You know, and thanks for everybody's interaction on that, and you know, in writing, I just don't. We've seen so much, and you know, you've paid very close attention covering them as well. You know what this year has been. So I mean, just the fact that we're talking about them potentially getting in the third week, and the fact that we're talking about them, you know, maybe playing Kansas or Purdue, and you know, we're talking about Sweet 16 right now. I think that in itself is something that they should be proud of. So I mean, if there is a chance that they get to Kansas and the stars align, or Phoenix rather, and the stars align, they get past Kansas and somehow, because my Final Four is Kansas, Kentucky, Villanova, Arizona. That was the first one. I think now I did my second chance. I have Wisconsin in there. But let's say by some stroke of luck, Michigan gets in there and faces either Arizona or Wisconsin. Well, Michigan would have had already beaten Oregon, which hung with Arizona. I think they only lost by three. And maybe can deal with the tempo. You know, Arizona can score one, you know, fast Pac-12 teams. Maybe you see Markkanen and Mo Wagner or DJ and Markkanen. And then, or Wisconsin. Let's say Wisconsin beats them. So, I mean, if hypotheticals all the way, Michigan, Wisconsin somehow in the national championship, then Michigan, I'll take Michigan in the national championship. I'll stretch it that far. How's that?
Going out on a limb here.
And that's as far as out on a limb as that you can go. But I mean,
yeah,
we've seen some things happen in the tournament. But I mean, the joking aside, just even getting into the Final Four, I mean, if they beat Kansas, I will be shocked. And if you say that you knocked off Kansas, a team that was favored to win a national championship, you know, people are talking about them winning it all. That just adds to it. Or if you beat Purdue again, like I said, you beat them three times in 1 year. That's huge bragging rights. And the Big Ten has done very well in the tournament this season too. So I mean, you score a win over your own conference in the tournament, that's just kind of a double bonus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree. I think it would be hard to complain about much. I'm on board. I think Michigan's going to make it through Oregon. I think it's going to be a very close game. Wouldn't be shocked if it went either way. But I do think they're going to fall short against Kansas. I think their athleticism is just unreal. And it stopping them in transition is just such a task. I mean, Michigan State did it for a while, but once that train gets rolling, it's hard to get back on board. But Adam, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. And where can people check out your stuff?
You could check out Michigan, Michigan State, Big Ten, all kinds of stuff. Michigan baseball, Wolverine's very good at baseball. Michigan football pro day tomorrow, so I'll have all that at FanRagSports.com. You can follow me on Twitter at AdamBiggers81.
Excellent. Thanks a lot, Adam. We appreciate it.
And no problem, Thomas. Anytime, man.
And as a reminder, everyone, that was Adam Biggers, writes for FanRag Sports. He covers both Michigan and Michigan State. A lot of great stuff. But with that, we'll move on to our next team, which is Purdue. And we have Casey on from BT Powerhouse, one of our writers. Casey, how's it going?
Very good, sir. Very good.
Yeah. Happy to have you back on here as we roll on our Sweet 16 preview. Let's just we talked about what happened last week, and let's just jump right into here on Purdue. We spent a lot of time talking about Kansas, so we're not going to talk about it as much. But what do you make of this matchup with Purdue and Kansas? And can the Boilermakers pull off the upset?
As much as I'd like to see it, you know, I don't really see it happening. They played two close games so far. You know, Iowa State almost came back in the round of 32 there. But honestly, I think they're only going to go as far as Swanigan can take them, and he's played very well so far. And who knows? In a tournament, it's always about the team who has the best player. And, you know, Kansas Jackson is very good. But Swanigan is also, you know, a standout. So I think if they do have a chance, it's going to go through Swanigan if he can carry them, then yes. But if I had to bet, I would say no.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with you. I feel like, you have to start out. Any reasonable person will tell you Kansas is a better team than Purdue. Top to bottom, you know, you take player for player, depth, lineup, you know, whatever you want to break down, Kansas is going to come out on top of Purdue. I mean, there's just no way you can have watched any college basketball this year and think Purdue is a better team. However, this is why we play the tournament. All you have to do is be better for 40 minutes. You don't have to do it for a week, not a full day, just a 40-minute game and come out on top. I mean, obviously, if the better team won every time, the one seeds would be in the Final Four every year. But my point here, though, isn't to just talk about how the tournament works, but to say, you know, Purdue's going to have to play above their usual play. Kansas is going to have to play below their usual play, I guess, to put it simply. And, you know, none of this is rocket science that I'm pointing out here, but I would say we have to start with that. So how does Purdue beat Kansas? I think the first thing, you got to dominate possessions. You got to dominate the boards. You know, Kansas is actually a pretty weak defensive rebounding team. Maybe Purdue can exploit that. You know, maybe Vincent Edwards can come up big. Caleb Swanigan, obviously. You know, if you can maximize some possessions, that's huge. And the other thing, you know, Casey, you just got with us, but I was talking about in our Michigan-Kansas scenario, so to speak, was that Kansas is a big transition team, big in transition. If you're minimizing those defensive rebounds, minimizing their defensive rebounds, and you're getting offensive rebounds and offensive boards, you know, they're not going to be able to get out and transition as much. And especially if you score, you can get back on defense. I think it's going to be interesting, you know, because there's always a decision to be made with a team that's really good in transition. And your question is, do you want to crash the boards or do you want to make sure that your guards play back and guard the transition game? If you're Purdue, I feel like that decision is going to determine the outcome of this game. Do you play your style of basketball where you crash the boards, you try to get every extra offensive board you can, or do you want to say, you know what, they're just too big of a challenge. We're going to have to play off a little bit, our guards. They're going to have to run back down to try to stop them. Casey, what are your thoughts on it? Personally, I say play your style, do what got you here, and just crash the boards. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I totally agree. I feel like Kansas's guards and wing players are definitely, you know, a step above Purdue's. So Purdue is definitely a good rebounding team. They have Swanigan. They have Haas off the bench. Like you said before, you know, dance with the girl you came with. So play how you played all year. Another big thing is they only shot 30% from 3-point last game. Ryan Klein has only had 5 points in the 3 points in the entire tournament. If he can, you know, he shot 40% this year. If he can hit some shots, if they can get a couple other guys going from the outside, that would be key. You said it before. They need to play not perfectly, but, you know, a better game than they have all year. So they definitely need shots to fall. They definitely need to beat Kansas, do all the little things.
Yeah, and I think as well, I think that's – I feel like it doesn't necessarily determine whether you – I mean, it does, but it doesn't. It doesn't determine whether you win or lose the game. That's just your strategy going in, necessarily if you want to play off or you want to score. But I feel like the determining factor overall, as I said, you know, I think you got to go with what got you there. I think that's your best strategy. But I feel like the true determining factor is going to be how are you going to guard Frank Mason? Because I feel like Purdue has some guys, I'm not going to say can shut down at all, but I feel like they have some guys who can play on Josh Jackson. I think Vincent Edwards will be able to hold his own for stretches. I feel like, you know, having that front court of Swanigan and Haas is going to protect the rim for the most part. But I feel like Purdue is going to have to figure out how they're going to guard Mason. Are they going to put Thompson on him? Are they going to play Mathias on him? I'm not sure, because I feel like, you know, with that, you also got to worry about Graham. I feel like Graham is the guy that they're going to put Mathias on. And I feel like you glue Thompson to Mason and he's going to have to hold his own. Casey, do you think, Thompson would be up for that task?
They're going to need him to be, you know, we won't see until Friday. I think the game is Friday. And Thursday. Game's on Thursday. They're going to have to. Like we talked about, the Kansas's backcourt is, you know, one of the best in the country. That's what's got them here. So someone's going to have to step up. And like you said, even if it's only in spot, a guy here, a guy there. Mathias is a good defender. He was an all-defensive selection.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they can slow him down.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And I apologize to Purdue fans. We're not going to go in depth as much about Purdue, and that's not because we have something against Purdue, but just because when we talked about Michigan, we previewed basically all the same teams Purdue would face. So it doesn't make any sense to tell you about Kansas twice. Casey, two quick questions on Purdue before we move on. And we're gonna have another guest joining us shortly. But first off, if Purdue does beat Kansas, and again, we don't really need to talk about a Michigan-Purdue game. We've seen it twice before. But what would a Purdue-Oregon game look like, first off? And second, if Purdue could get past Kansas and or get past Oregon to the Final Four, what would an Elite Eight or a Final Four appearance mean for Purdue?
Well, coming into the Big Dance, I felt like Purdue gave us the best – well, as a Big Ten, gave them the best chance for a Final Four team. You know, so far they haven't let us down. If they do play Oregon, they are down a player. Chris Boucher is not, he's out of the lineup. He ain't coming back, but they've done a good job, you know, getting by in both rounds, but they almost lost to Rhode Island. I don't see if they, I believe in Michigan. I think Michigan is going to ride this, this momentum they have. But if they do play Oregon, I think Purdue matches up very well. I think that's a game that Purdue could win. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how long it's been since Purdue's gotten this deep, but it would mean a lot for the program and for Matt Painter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I agree. You know, to start off with Oregon, you know, I already said a couple minutes ago, I think Michigan will beat the Ducks. But that aside, if Oregon did take down Michigan, which is certainly possible, I think Purdue actually matches up pretty well against Oregon. Typically, in today's college basketball, your offensive power, three-point shooting teams are your top teams. But Purdue is going to be a totally different team. It will be night and day, you know, Jekyll Hyde, whatever you want to come up with for how you want to phrase this. But it will be like oil and water. Purdue playing – and I know Purdue shoots threes. I know sometimes it gets over-exaggerated, but Purdue's going to try to score inside. Oregon's going to try to score outside. But the one thing that I think Purdue has is, first off, they will have a huge advantage inside, both literally and figuratively. But second, Mathias on Dorsey is a great matchup. I think Mathias will slow him down significantly, and I think that would be a spot where Purdue can really take advantage. You know, I think Mathias is a great defensive matchup for Dorsey. Not to say he can shut him down again, but I think he can slow him down enough to where Purdue will be able to overcome it, especially if they can get some of Oregon's big guys in foul trouble, you know, as the Ducks are a little thin there. If Purdue did get the win to make it to a Final Four or even get into an Elite Eight, I think you'd have to regard this as one of Painter's best seasons, undoubtedly. Certainly one of the best seasons for Purdue in a long time, maybe even going back to Glenn Robinson when he was there. And I think overall, Purdue fans, even now, you have to be pretty proud of this team. But if they could pull off another win or two this weekend, you'd have to feel great. I don't think they would have great chances in the Final Four to come home with the title, but a Final Four would obviously speak for itself. But with that, we do have another guest on here tonight. We have Tony Patelis, who is a great Twitter follow for everyone. Tony, how's it going?
Good, Tom. How are you, man?
Good, good. Just chatting about some of these Sweet 16 games. We were just finishing up talking about Purdue. What do you make of this Purdue-Kansas game tomorrow night? And what do you kind of make of the Boilermakers here heading into this weekend?
Well, I love what I see from Purdue. You know, I think it's not a bad matchup. Swan, again, obviously is going to be a major problem for the Jayhawks. I think Kansas has not done well against big men this year. They've had some some issues. You know, they're slim up front. You know, behind Landon Lucas, there's not much. Carlton Bragg hasn't given them much of late. So I think Swanigan is definitely going to be a problem. But it, again, it's trying to slow down, you know, Frank Mason and Justin Jackson and Devontae Graham. Kansas relies so heavily on those three guys. So if Purdue can somehow limit one of them, I think they have a pretty good chance to win the game.
Mm-hmm. And Tony, you know, we've spent a lot of time on the Midwest. Yeah. The Midwest bracket or region, I should say, so far tonight. You know, obviously Michigan's in there and Purdue is in there. So we've talked about Oregon. We've talked about Kansas. All the Big Ten fans know obviously what a Michigan Purdue game would look like. But if there's a couple facts fans should know about Oregon or Kansas going into tomorrow, what would you make those out to be?
Oregon is an excellent offensive team. You know, they have a lot of weapons. You saw what Tyler Dorsey did the other night. He was excellent. He was like 9 of 10 from the floor. Dylan Brooks is one of the best players in the country. You know, Jordan Bell up front is one of the most underrated big men, I feel, in the country. I just feel like Oregon, they're not the same team without Chris Boucher. He does so much for them. You know, he can stretch the floor, and as much as I love Bell, he just can't do that. So it's going to be tough for Michigan to limit all those weapons. But, you know, Michigan, I feel they're on a destiny run, honestly. So I'm picking the Wolverines. I really do. You know, I think Walton has been maybe the best player in this tournament. He's averaging like 19-7-5, playing out of his mind. So I love watching the Wolverines right now. I think they're going to win this game, but I think it's going to be very highly competitive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be a lot of offense, which should make things exciting for fans. But I was going to ask who you thought was going to come out of the bracket, but obviously you answered it. So I'm gonna jump over to our final Big Ten team, which we really haven't talked about much today. That's Wisconsin. Yeah. They're playing in the East in Madison Square Garden, which will thoroughly be disappointed that Duke and Villanova didn't make it, but too bad. they are going to get Florida on Friday night, and should they beat Florida, they're going to get Baylor or South Carolina, which I'm sure everyone had in their bracket. What do you make of this region, and what do you make of the Badgers right now?
Well, you know, I love their experience. You know, I never count out Wisconsin. Koenig and Hayes, as we know, have been in so many big games. And we saw Bronson Koenig again come up big for the 100th time, it seems like. So I just love their experience factor. I think this matchup with Florida is going to be a little bit more difficult, maybe even than the Villanova game, because Florida's got some really good length up front athleticism. So they might have some issues with that. You know, looking at the other matchup, I mean, I don't think anybody had, you know, South Carolina in the Sweet 16. Baylor is a different story. They're playing pretty well right now. I like that matchup too. I think it makes for a better tournament when we see some new teams and some new blood, you know, advance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's it definitely gets kind of stale when it's North Carolina, Duke, all these teams over and over again. So it's nice to know that. I'm sorry. I'm just thinking about that. Somebody's getting their first Final Four as a coach out of that region. Congrats to someone on Sunday night, I guess. I agree. I think this Florida game is going to be really challenging. The thing about the Gators, obviously they've had a coaching change recently. A lot of Big Ten fans are familiar with Billy Donovan. Obviously his success speaks for itself. He's in the NBA right now. What are the differences between Donovan and White that fans would notice on the court here on Friday night?
You know, I don't think there's much, honestly. I think it's pretty familiar, even like roster wise. This Florida team really reminds me of some of Donovan's teams. You know, length, athleticism up front. You know, they're really good defensively. They create turnovers. Mm-hmm. So I think it's almost like a mirror image of a Billy Donovan team, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like this game is going to be the opposite of the Michigan-Oregon game. So if you're looking for the excitement, watch on Thursday night, not Friday, I guess. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for Wisconsin. You know, Florida, I feel like, has a guy at every spot who can match up pretty well on defense. You know, Robinson's great. Barry's great. It's going to be very difficult to score. But Wisconsin has their secret weapon in big games, which is Koenig. What do you make of his play so far?
He's done what he's done his whole career, pretty much. He's making big shots, and Wisconsin always seems to, you know, make you play at their pace, and they did that against against Villanova. They absolutely destroyed Villanova in the paint. You know, they were like fifth. They shot 53% field goal percentage, but they were like 6 for 18 from three and 7 of 16 from the free throw line, and they
wow.
turned the ball over like 15 times. And they still won the game, and they beat one of the best teams in the country. So, you know, Wisconsin will find a way. They always seem to keep themselves in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, as a little background for what this matchup's going to be like, you know, Wisconsin did such a good job inside on Saturday against, you know, don't get me wrong, Villanova's a great defensive team. But
yeah.
Florida really good inside on defense. They're 30th nationally in two-point defense. Opponents only get like 50% of their points from 2-point range, which is pretty low, all things considered.
Mm-hmm.
So Badgers will have some work to do there. But if Wisconsin should take down Florida and they get, which I would think Baylor will advance out of that game, but, who knows, what do you make of a potential Wisconsin Baylor showdown? And, you know, if the Gamecocks do the unthinkable and win again, what would you make of a Wisconsin's South Carolina Elite Eight game?
Well, I certainly think Wisconsin matches up better with South Carolina. You know, Ethan Happ's one of the best big men in the country. But other than that, you know, they don't have that much up front. You know, Nigel Hayes is obviously a very good player. But I think matchup-wise, it's better for Wisconsin to match up with South Carolina. Baylor's just got so much up front. You know, we know Jonathan Motley is one of the best big men in the country, and Terry Mastin, their other big man there, he's averaging 19-9 in this tournament. So they're getting a lot from him. They're playing really good defense. So I think Wisconsin would definitely have a tougher time with Baylor than South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree. I feel like if you're a Badger fan, be root for South Carolina all you can. Maybe
yeah.
go decked out in gear. I don't know. I'll reserve some more Wisconsin talk for after Tony gets off with us, if you're a Badger fan listening. But I wanted to take a step back and talk a little bit about the tournament at large. Have there been any big surprises for you? Obviously, there have been upsets, but anything that has surprised you or anything that you're really looking forward to here this weekend and next weekend as well?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, as we know, there hasn't been a lot of upsets this tournament, and that's always kind of upsetting. But, you know, it definitely makes for better matchups later. You know, I think the biggest surprise would maybe be Xavier advancing. You know, I think mm-hmm. they should build Chris Mack a statue, because that team was dead and buried a few weeks ago. And I do think they got a good draw with Maryland and Florida State, but still, I think Xavier getting to the Sweet 16 is pretty surprising. And you know, the thing that I wanted to mention real quick is the fouling.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an mm-hmm. unbelievable amount of fouls called. I tweeted this out the other day. There was 549 fouls called in the second round.
Wow.
I mean, that's averaging 35 fouls per game. I mean, it just really frustrates
wow.
me. I'm sorry to even mention it, but it's just like it's getting out of control. And I hope, you know, the refs let these kids play a little bit more later in the tournament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially, I mean, I know it happens every year, but some of the blown calls last weekend were just mind-boggling and really had a big impact in the outcome of the games, which is not something anybody likes to see. That's obviously frustrating. But I just wanted to hit you real quick on two final questions here before we let you head out.
Sure.
The first, Illinois made a big move. They hired Brad Underwood as the new coach. Obviously, you're a guy who really pays attention to college basketball at large. What do you make of Underwood, and what kind of hire is this on the national scene?
I think it was a grand slam. I mean, I really do. I think Oklahoma State, you know, underpaid him, and that's why, you know, he probably bolted. But, you know, I love it. I think Brad Underwood's a tremendous coach. I don't think anybody expected Oklahoma State to be an at-large NCAA tournament team this year, and they turned out to be. You know, he you see what he did at Stephen F. Austin. you know, winning the Southland Conference, you know, I can't even tell you how many years in a row. So I think Illinois couldn't have done better with this hire. And I think as long as, you know, he can get that recruiting landscape in Chicago, he'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. I'm in total agreement. I think it was an absolute grand slam. And then the other one, Indiana, they let go of Tom Crean. They're still in the midst of their search, at least as far as the public is aware. What did you make of the Tom Crean firing? I guess the Tom Crean era, and you have any speculation on who you think the Hoosiers should go after?
Well, I think it's going to be Alford. That's just my gut feeling. I think he's the guy. I heard Billy Donovan as well, but I mean, I don't know if he'll come back to college that quick. And I don't know how he feels about the NBA, but I was kind of against the Tom Crean firing, honestly. I think this year he somewhat should have gotten a pass. I mean, losing Colin Hartman preseason, then, you know, you lose a guy like OG Anunoby to a torn ACL. James Blackman just doesn't seem to be the same player, you know, with all his knee injuries. So I feel like he should have maybe gotten another year. You know, the last 5 years, they've been to 3 Sweet 16s, 2 Big Ten titles. And I understand Indiana has, you know, high expectations, but I don't know. I thought he should have, you know, got at least one more year to maybe work things out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting. I know I had said before they had fired him, I thought it could have easily gone either way. I thought there was enough reasons to fire him and enough reasons to keep him, but obviously they let him go. But Tony, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. And where can people check out your stuff?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at College Hoop News. I also do you know, a few Periscopes a week. We have College Hoop Chats. Feel free to join in. I usually do them on Wednesday nights at 6:30 Eastern time and Sunday nights at 7:30 Eastern time. Actually, with the Sweet 16 going on, I'm going to actually do one tonight at 8 p.m. So if you want to catch that after the podcast, come on and join us.
Excellent. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
All right, Tom. Thanks, man. Have a good night.
And as a reminder, everyone, that's Tony Patelis. He's kind of a free agent, so to speak, but huge college basketball fan. Anything you want to know, he's in the loop. One of the most knowledgeable guys you will ever see on college basketball, and a really nice guy as well. But as I promised everyone, I just wanted to ask him a couple of the coaching issues, just because, like I said, he has such a national perspective. It's interesting to add to the conversation. But I wanted to spend a little bit more time on the Badgers before we end the podcast tonight, and really just talk about what it would mean if the Badgers do get past Florida and or get past a Baylor or South Carolina, depending on who would get there. You know, let's start with the fact that I think Wisconsin has really turned a page this year. I mean, for some people, this is going to sound a little outdated and maybe a stupid statement, but I think in a lot of ways, Wisconsin has already legitimated its program this year. I know that sounds weird. They've been to 3 straight Sweet 16s. They went to 2 straight Final Fours just a couple of years ago. But I say that for 2 reasons. First off, beating a team like Villanova is a huge statement. It absolutely turns everyone's heads in the college basketball world, gets a lot of attention, and really changes the entire dynamic. That's the first thing. Second thing is Greg Gard only had one of those runs. And really that was sort of the half season, so to speak. This is his first full season, getting them to a Sweet 16, potentially an Elite Eight or a Final Four. I mean, that is going to already put him among some of the best coaches in college basketball as far as achievements go. And I think an important thing to remember here is, you know, Wisconsin's going to have a very interesting offseason. You know, most likely they're going to get Ethan Happ back, but this team is going to look much, much different next year. You know, Caney's going to be gone. Vito Brown's going to be gone. Nigel Hayes will be gone. There will probably be some attrition on the roster. Showalter will be gone. This is going to be a very different looking team next season. Happ will be there, but there are going to be a lot of new faces. There are going to be a lot of guys who didn't play that much this year who are going to be playing. And specifically, you know, we saw this last year. Greg Gard is going to look at transfers. Bo Ryan really didn't do that much. He wasn't a big transfer guy. I absolutely think Greg Gard will look at transfers. And I think they'll probably add one this summer with how much depth they're losing. And that's huge. If you're one of these huge national brands, which again, I know the Raw stuff said that Wisconsin was, but I feel like this is a year where they really turned that page. And, you know, just four straight Sweet 16s is just mind-boggling for so many reasons, you know, considering how difficult that is. And Wisconsin, you know, their achievements simply speak for themselves, you know, over the last few years. And I think, you know, if they could advance any further, it would just be really impressive. Great job from Greg Gard. And you would have to think that it would start to change the recruiting dynamic overall. You know, I know Wisconsin's not going to be the program that's going to reel in, you know, five stars every year or something, but I think this is a turning point for the program in the sense that I think they're transforming into a really good program that people respect, into a program that people, you know, fear. They really view it as a real national contender. And I think the Badgers have a great shot at moving on this weekend. You know, Florida's a really good team. The Gators were in my Elite Eight. I think they're a really good team. They're very balanced, very good on defense, similar to Wisconsin. And I'll just say this now. I think Ethan Happ's going to have trouble in this game. I really do. I think they're going to find ways to cut off his possessions, cut off his opportunities, especially considering, you know, he doesn't get the opportunities himself. He has to have the ball passed into him usually. So I would watch out for that. But I think there's a lot on the line for the Badgers coming into this weekend, and it will be interesting to see if they can get the job done. But overall, you know, very excited for the next couple of days of college basketball. I think there's a decent, really decent shot. At least one of the Big Ten teams is playing on Saturday or Sunday. And, you know, it wouldn't be that crazy if we had one go to next week, which a lot of people did not see coming. So looking forward to that. And with that, I did get a question here for the podcast that I wanted to answer. It's from Clay before we get off. He's asking which non-Big Ten NCAA tournament team is the most likely to make it this year, and which one that made it this year is the most likely to miss it next year. So non-Big Ten tourney team who I think can make it next year, most likely. I would say first, straight up, Iowa. I think it is absolutely the Hawkeyes. Really young team. They almost made it this year. Losing Peter Jack is going to be a big hit. Peter Jack, excuse me. But a lot of talent. Bohannon, Cook, Moss, you know, even Bear. There's a lot to like about Iowa. And frankly, if you know, one thing goes here or there this season, you know, even that Nebraska overtime loss earlier in the year, you know, maybe that Nebraska Omaha shocking, you know, shocker, maybe Iowa's in, you know, who knows? They were relatively close to getting in this year. So I would say Iowa's the easy answer. I know some people like Penn State to be there, but I think it's the Hawkeyes for sure. Team that made it this year that's most likely to miss next year. Let me start by saying that I don't think any of them are super, super likely to miss next year. But specifically, you know, Maryland has vast majority of the team back. Northwestern has the vast majority of the team back. You know, Michigan's going to have that front court back. Purdue should have talent on the team next year. You know, Swanigan's probably going to leave, so that's going to be a big hit. But I don't know. That's a really tough decision there. I think I would probably go Michigan State just because I would assume Miles Bridges leaves. They are losing a couple depth guys, so to speak, on their roster, and they're probably going to be – they're going to be reliant on underclassmen next year. But I don't want to pick against Izzo, so I wouldn't pick them to miss it. But I would probably say Michigan State, maybe Michigan, just because they lose Walton and Irvin. And then after that, I know this is going to sound weird after what I just talked about, but maybe Wisconsin after that, just because they're losing so much. But as I said, I don't really expect any of these seven teams to have a super tough time. Most likely one will drop off. But it's hard to put your finger on right now, especially without knowing who's departing. But with that, I'll end this. This podcast has been a really long one, so you guys should have plenty of content. So no complaining. But as always, you know, I'm Thomas Bendit. You can follow me on Twitter at @tbendit. And enjoy the Sweet 16. Hopefully, we'll be back with a podcast, maybe early Saturday morning or something, to talk about the Elite Eight. But thanks again, and we'll see you all next time.